Welcome to the Delmarva Almanac. Each week we connect you to the best of Delmarva. I'm your host, Dana Kester McCabe. This week we're dipping into our archives in honor of next weekend's Delmarva Birding Weekend and the Ward World Championship Carving Competition, where our featured artist, Rich Smoker, will receive a Living Legends Award. Also from our archives, we'll hear how music played a part in the lives of legendary master wildfowl carvers Lem and Steve Ward. In the second half of our show, we'll have two new stories. We'll learn about the Delaware Botanical Gardens being created in Dagsboro. And naturalist Jim Rapp will tell us about some neotropical tourists who visit our region this time of year. Rich Smoker is a master waterfowl sculptor from Marion Station, Maryland. His carvings have won prizes at the highest levels of competition, including best in show in the shooting rig division. Rich has been carving all of his life.
I was in high school. My dad was the industrial arts teacher, and at that time it meant woodshop. He was a woodshop teacher, so that was one of my strong suits. And I started duck hunting when I was 16 and didn't have the money to buy decoys. So obviously, working with wood was a family thing, so my dad and I decided to make a rig of decoys to hunt with. So that's what I would do, is I would steal out of classes when I could and go down to the wood shop and work on decoys. That's how I got started. I was offered a job to apprentice with a taxidermist. So I apprenticed with him for 9 years, and in the meantime, I'm still carving. And during that 9 years, I became the person doing all the avian forms in that studio. And then I went out on my own, and you know, meantime I'm still carving, you know, I'm still doing that. And I got tired of working into doing the you know, the skin prep and all the blood, the guts, and the gore, and decided to heck with it. I'll just go and do wood. Doesn't talk back to me and it doesn't smell funny, so that's what I'm doing, and I've been doing it ever since for 46 years now, you know, 40, you know, that's probably longer than I want to tell. That's what I was born to do.
Rich uses different types of woods for different types of projects. If he's carving decorative birds, he'll use tupelo gum from the southern Gulf states. It has little grain and is light and easy to carve. If he's doing a working decoy that will be used for hunting, he uses white cedar or white pine for their durability. He also uses these for replicas of antique decoys. He'll use harder woods like American holly for those parts of the bird that need special structural support. There are so many beautiful woods to choose from that he does not like to limit himself. Likewise, he does not limit himself by having a favorite bird subject.
My favorite, and I tell everybody, people ask me that same question, what's your favorite? And I keep telling them it's the next one. The next bird that I do is my favorite. And there's a lot of truth in that because I do a lot of research beforehand.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Delmarva Almanac. I'm Dana Kester McCabe, and this is an interview from our archives with wildfowl sculptor Rich Smoker. Much of his work comes from commission, so some of his ideas are based on client requests, while the rest are from his own inspiration. When beginning a project, he goes through his library of books, photographs, castings, and his collection of over 200 mounted birds from around the world.
I'll get all of these things together with my calipers and I'll start drawing a pattern. Draw the pattern and then I'll transfer it to a block of wood. And then I'll just begin the reduction process of that wood, either with a hatchet, with draw knife, spoke shaves, knives, finishing with power tools. Then the fun begins is the painting. Which is what I really love to do, is sit and paint, paint on the birds. I can just get lost in that. And I think that's pretty much the long and the short of it. It's really a process of using your imagination, and if you can use your imagination, if you can visualize something in the wood, you can get it out of the wood.
Rich says for those starting out that learning their subject is the first step. He tells his students to get to know one bird at a time, and each bird will help you with the other birds. He says that his creative process makes use of his intellect, his emotions, and his spirituality.
I think you have to combine all three. Either that or you're just kidding yourself. I was always told a man who works with his hands is a laborer. A man who works with his mind and his hands is a craftsman. And a man who works with his mind, his hands, and his heart is an artist. And I think all three of those would lend themselves to that quote. There's so many different things about it. I mean, you're trying to bring a life form out of a block of wood, you know, which, you know, by itself has been a tree that's been felled in the forest and it's dead. Now you're trying to bring life back. With this work, with our carving, it's called carving, but it's actually sculpture. Because we're taking a block of wood and we're taking our own ideas and we're bringing a bird out of it or whatever we're making out of it. But it's not finished in my end of it until it's painted. So we're doing sculpture and we're doing painting. And both of those disciplines require pretty much a lifetime to really to delve into and master. And to be honest with you, there's not many art forms that really require that. This one does.
The Ward World Championship Carving Competition in April and the Easton Waterfowl Festival in November are the only two shows Rich enters every year. These two events keep him busy the rest of the year with commissions, which he's grateful for. He says that he has to hide anything else he does for those shows because otherwise patrons who visit his shop will try to buy up all of his inventory. Rich gives a lot of his time serving on the parent organizations of those shows, and he teaches. He has what many artists dream of, a life making art for a living. But he's not in it for the money.
What I want people to see, and I've done well over 3,500 birds now, I want people to see somebody who enjoyed walking this life. Somebody who enjoyed getting up and going to work every morning and doing what they do. And that's really where I'm at.
Next weekend is the annual Ward World Championship Carving Competition being held at the Ocean City Convention Center. This is where Rich will be honored with the Ward Foundation's Living Legend Award along with Del Herbert of Chula Vista, California, and Todd Holy of Appleton, Wisconsin. The award recognizes individuals who've made a significant impact on the field of wildfowl art and who've been longtime advocates for it and the Ward Foundation. At next weekend's event, you'll be able to see their work, demonstrations, and over 1,200 carvings by artists from here on the shore and around the world. If you're looking for an interesting art experience this weekend, head to Snow Hill for the annual plein air event, Paint Snow Hill. Today and tomorrow, you can see 70 artists all around town painting the sights. Tonight, you can buy a ticket to get a preview of the finished works of art, and tomorrow you can see the show for free from noon until 4. All works will be available for purchase. Find links and details for these and other cultural events on our website, delmarvaalmanac.com/arts. Also, in honor of the Ward Foundation's annual event, here's a story we did some time ago about the musical talents of their namesakes, Lem and Steve Ward. Lem and Steve Ward, like their father before them, made their living as barbers during the early part of the 20th century. Though they had their own business, they still lived close to the land, hunting and fishing like many of their neighbors in Somerset County. They began carving decoys for their own use, but their skills began to get a reputation, and so they developed a side job of selling their decoys. The story of how their cottage industry helped sustain them through the Great Depression and led them to acclaim as folk artists is well known by Delmarva residents. You may even know that despite that success, they did not give up their day job until retiring as barbers in 1965. But what you may not know is that these sculptors of hair and wood were also musicians. Not surprisingly, they sang in a barbershop quartet.
Hello to everybody. Hello to everyone. Now we are here to spread good cheer with songs and days of love. Let's start the ball rolling, singing some harmonies. Barbershop Quartet. We love to sing you that. Hello to everyone.
In 1962, their quartet, which included Harlan and Lawrence Tyler, was recognized in The Harmonizer, the official magazine of the Society for the Preservation and Encouragement of Barbershop Quartet Singing in America. The four men had been singing together for 32 years, and their chapter of the Society in Crisfield had just been given its official license. Their repertoire included some old-time love songs and familiar Christian hymns.
Just a closer walk with thee, O my Lord, O my Lord, O my Lord, Jesus is my plea, O my Lord.
You're listening to the Delmarva Almanac. I'm Dana Kester McCabe, and we're listening to legendary decoy carvers Lem and Steve Ward singing in their barbershop quartet. Lem and Steve Ward only had an elementary school education, but that didn't stop them from writing poetry, which they sometimes affixed to the bottom of their decoys. Steve wrote this poem about the life of a decoy. I'm just an old has-been decoy. No ribbons I have won. My sides and head are full of shot from many a blazing gun. My home has been by the river, just drifting along with the tide. No roof have I had for a shelter, no place where I can abide. I've rocked to winter's wild fury. I've scorched in the heat of the sun. I've drifted and drifted and drifted, for tides never cease to run. I was picked up by some fool collector who put me up here on a shelf. But my place is out on the river where I can drift all by myself. I want to go back to the shoreline where flying clouds hang thick and low and get the touch of raindrops and the velvety soft touch of the snow. I think I can relate to that decoy. How about you? I'm sure that you'll agree that though the sign on their decoy shop said L.T. Ward and Brothers, Wildfowl Counterfeiters in Wood, they were indeed genuine artists, inside and out. Visit the Ward Museum in Salisbury or the Ward Brothers Workshop in Crisfield to find out more about Lem and Steve Ward and their primary claim to fame, decoy carving. And don't miss the upcoming Ward World Championship next weekend in Ocean City to see today's counterfeiters in wood. Thank you to the Ward Museum for providing us with these recordings of the Ward Brothers singing.
And I want you to come down on the little ship right over to Old Over, just to see the old hometown.
And now for some Delmarva dates with history for this time period. On April 14, 1939, Delaware officially adopted the blue hen chicken as their state bird. Captain Jonathan Caldwell of Kent County, Delaware, raised fighting cocks that were bluish in color. His troops held chicken fights during the downtime between battles against the British during the Revolutionary War. The blue hen became their mascot because of their fierce and winning ways. And on April 15, 1964, after 4 years of construction, the 23-mile Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel opened for traffic extending Route 13 southward all the way to Norfolk, Virginia. It's time for a break now. When we come back, we'll hear about the Delaware Botanical Gardens and the neotropical migrants who arrive here about this time every year.
Support for the Delmarva Almanac is provided in part by EatDrinkByArt.com, an online guide to 18 different Delmarva towns and arts districts, where you can purchase your very own masterpiece while enjoying a meal and a night out. For more information about each town and a regional arts calendar, visit EatDrinkByArt.com.
All this week is Delmarva Public Radio's Spring Membership Drive. The stories you hear on the Delmarva Almanac are like the great fruits and vegetables you get at your favorite farm stand, fresh and locally grown. If you value locally produced programs about the unique culture of Delmarva, make your donation now online at delmarvapublicradio.com. Welcome back to the Delmarva Almanac. I'm your host, Dana Kester McCabe. in Dagsboro, Delaware, a wonderful garden project is unfolding. Actually, to call it a project really doesn't do it justice. When it's done, the Delaware Botanical Gardens will be a very special destination for locals and visitors alike. A few years ago, a group of garden enthusiasts realized they all had the same dream of creating just such a place in Lower Delaware. Their vision was to build a beautiful attraction that was both educational and beneficial to the local community. They began organizing, raising funds, and looking for property. They found a parcel on Pepper Creek in Sussex County, which was already destined to be part of a conservation easement. They leased the land for almost no money for 100 years. The property has a mix of meadow, woodlands, and 1,000 feet of tidal waterfront along Pepper Creek. I recently had the opportunity to tag along on a tour of the future gardens with a group of horticulture and landscape design students from the University of Delaware. Landscape architect Rodney Robinson showed us the sites and explained the philosophy behind their plans for the property. This was recorded on a beautiful but slightly breezy day at the site. Here's Rodney Robinson.
You know, this is a grassroots garden from the start. People involved in a place. And I've never really worked on a garden like that. I was even more interested because this is a lot of topography from here down to the water. It's a lot of topography for Sussex County, if you know anything about Sussex County. And so it's dramatic for Sussex County. And the woodland, even though it's you know, primarily early growth, successional, mature early successional plants, it gives us high shade and a beautiful soil here that's a very sandy loam that really means you can instantly go in and begin planting. You know, there was a lot of ideas originally about what was going to be in this botanical garden. And at some point you have to pause, and any kind of planning exercise like this requires understanding your site, physical opportunities and constraints. Then the second thing is a program, and that is, who do you want to be? What kind of a garden do you want to be? What do you want to provide for the public? Where do you want to go? That vision thing.
The Delaware Botanical Gardens project was recently awarded a $750,000 grant from the Longwood Gardens Foundation. This enabled them to hire Piet Udolf, an internationally renowned Dutch garden designer. Udolf is known for developing gardens that make use of perennials and grasses to create year-round color. His most famous work was on the High Line, a greenway park created on an abandoned and elevated section of the New York Central Railroad in Manhattan. Rodney explained what Piet's garden will add.
So you'll have the woods to the right, and you'll have Udolf's garden as a primary focus. Now, his garden is all about color and texture and how that changes through the season. And when you think, when most people are coming, they're not coming early in the morning. They're coming midday, later day, even into the evening. If you have an event into the evening, the sun sets here, so the garden will be lit in its best form throughout the time of day when people were here. So all those little considerations go into determining how to develop the site. It's not just, let's make a pretty garden someplace. You've got to think strategically in your design process about how to choreograph that garden experience. And then the rest of the garden in time will unfold around here. There's, you know, in the planning, there's a idea of a freshwater pond garden experience with multiple garden experiences around it. And there are a lot of other ideas of programmed gardens and what they should be like. You have to create your identity. That's very important.
Woodland trails are being developed to be ADA compliant, that is, wheelchair accessible. Horticulture Director Greg Tepper has used some of the cleared sticks and branches to create huge sculptural nests that visitors can actually walk into. We here at the Delmarva Almanac hope to follow along with the progress of these creative folks at the Delaware Botanical Gardens. If you'd like to see pictures of what they've done so far and get a link to their website, visit delmarvaalmanac.com/living. That's also where you can find out about what's coming up in the Home and Garden calendar. Like next Saturday, April 23rd, is the Bud and Bug Festival in Milford and the Chestertown Earth Day Festival. Now here is naturalist Jim Rapp to tell us about the neotropical migrants who arrive here about this time every year.
April and May are exciting months for birders on Delmarva. Almost every day, we see new migratory species arrive from southern wintering grounds, and birds that winter with us take flight for breeding grounds in the north. Waterfowl and loons on our bays are replaced by warblers and vireos in our forests. Each sunrise brings the promise of new spring bird song filling the air as our neotropical migrants begin their ancient courtship rituals. Our neotropical migratory birds actually spend most of their year in the Caribbean, Mexico, Central America, and South America. They arrive here to nest and raise young in the summer. Some nest with us here on Delmarva, while others migrate through the peninsula to breed in the northeastern U.S. and Canada. The term neotropical refers to migratory birds of the Western Hemisphere that winter south of the Tropic of Cancer and breed north of that same latitudinal line. There are close to 200 bird species that fit that definition, and most are small songbirds and shorebirds. You might wonder why a warbler or sandpiper would leave the tropics and southern South America to breed and raise young in the north when there is so much life south of the border. The answer lies in the incredible abundance of the food that neotropical migrants need to raise their babies here and further north, such as caterpillars, small insects, fruit and nectar in our forests, and horseshoe crab eggs and invertebrates on our beaches. Delmarva's forests, marshes, and beaches are like a giant, never-ending buffet for birds, and they have more daylight here for feeding in the spring and summer than they do near the equator. When that food disappears and the days begin to shorten in the fall, these same birds fly south with their young to survive the winter. Many of these tiny birds migrate tremendous distances to get to Delmarva in time for the spring breeding season. A scarlet tanager migrating from Colombia or Ecuador may travel 3,000 miles to nest on Delmarva, while a red knot may travel 10,000 miles from the southern tip of Argentina to its breeding grounds in the Arctic. Most small birds migrate at night when temperatures are cooler, the air is calmer, and predators are fewer. They stop to rest and feed during the day. Most fly between 20 to 40 miles per hour. A single nonstop flight between rest stops may last for several hours or several days. Songbirds flying over the expansive Gulf of Mexico are known to rest on boats or oil rigs before completing their open water flight to the U.S. When they make landfall, they are exhausted and hungry. If they hit rough weather, a phenomenon known as a fallout occurs when hundreds and thousands of birds concentrate in an area to rest and feed before starting the next leg of their journey. Several migrants have already arrived on Delmarva, and more are on their way over the next several weeks. Here are a few to look and listen for when you're exploring our parks and preserves. Purple martins have arrived from South America, and many have already started to nest in man-made martin houses along the Delmarva coast. Purple martins are our largest swallow, and they are known for their aerial maneuvers when flying to catch insects on the wing. Males are a dark, glossy purple, and females are mostly brown. Native Americans hung hollow gourds to serve as purple martin nest houses well before Europeans arrived in the Americas. Purple martins in the eastern U.S. now nest almost exclusively in bird houses, while those in the west use tree cavities. The Louisiana water thrush prefers Delmarva's bald cypress swamps and slow-moving streams. This large warbler looks more like a thrush or sparrow, with its drab brown back, white belly with dark stripes, and white stripe over the eye. It can be found walking between tree roots and cypress knees at the water's edge, constantly bobbing its tail up and down. When the Louisiana water thrush arrives on its Delmarva breeding grounds from wintering in Mexico and Central America, males begin to sing immediately. He will sing almost nonstop all day until he acquires a mate. Here is an example of the water thrush song from the Sibley Birds app for iPhone. Another warbler of Delmarva's cypress swamps is the brilliant gold-yellow Prothonotary warbler. It is one of only two neotropical warblers that nest in tree cavities. The name Prothonotary refers to clerics in the Roman Catholic Church who wore bright yellow robes. Known to some as the preacher bird for sermonizing all day, the red-eyed vireo is one of the most commonly seen and heard neotropical migrants in Delmarva's forests. They have olive green backs, white bellies, a gray cap, and black and white streaks near their red eyes. Over 12,000 red-eyed vireo song types have been recorded. Here is an example of a typical song from the Sibley Birds app for iPhone. Males will sing constantly from dawn to dusk. More than 20,000 individual phrases of the red-eyed vireo's song have been counted in a single day. Male scarlet tanagers are one of the most beautifully colored neotropical migrants in Delmarva's spring and summer forests. Males have electric crimson bodies with ink-black wings and tails, while females are yellowish-green with dark wings. Look for these birds high in the forest canopy from May until late summer, when they take off for northern South America. Ruby-throated hummingbirds are the only breeding hummingbird found in the eastern U.S. They arrive on Delmarva after flying from Central America. During migration, many hummingbirds cross the Gulf of Mexico in a single non-stop flight. You can find these tiny iridescent green birds glittering in the sun as they feed on the nectar provided by red and orange spring flowers or at a hummingbird feeder outside of your kitchen window. If you want to explore Delmarva in search of neotropical migrants, join the expert guides leading field trips during the Spring Delmarva Birding Weekend, which will be held April 21st through 24th. For more information, please visit www.delmarvabirding.com. Neotropical migrants fill our natural areas with color and song every spring and summer. Until next time, I hope this story inspires you to explore Delmarva's many natural wonders.
Thanks, Jim. Well, that's all for this edition of the Delmarva Almanac. Be sure to follow us on Facebook or Twitter, and next week join us to learn more about our local culture and get connected to our natural wonders. If you'd like to become an underwriter for this program, visit delmarvaalmanac.com/support. We'd like to thank our community partners, the Friends of Delmarva Public Radio, the Community Foundation of the Eastern Shore, and underwriters eatdrinkbyart.com for their help in bringing this program to you, our audience. Our theme music was provided by Brightside Studio. This show has been a Moonshell production. Thanks for listening. Until we meet again, may the rhythms and tides of Delmarva bring you good fortune.